Growing up, I didn't go to church on Sunday mornings, but on Friday nights, both my mom and I would sit down and watch movies, and she would show them from a Christian perspective.
Growing up, we were out in the woods, so I didn't watch many movies, but I learned to look around me and find a spiritual lesson in everything I saw.
So now, I want you guys to experience the goodness of God in the movies we watch.
Join us as we unpack meaning from the movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics. Well, what is up, movie lovers? Welcome back to the podcast that loves to show you the goodness of God in the movies we watch. I am movie apologist Clark.
I am Bethany Birch, who is getting to know more movies.
Yeah. Aren't you excited about this little journey we've been on so far with watching these movies and examining them from a Christian perspective and trying to see a spiritual component in them?
It's been pretty fun for me because I see a spiritual component in everything anyways, and I'm not familiar with a lot of movies since I grew up without electricity. It sounds like a joke.
It's not a joke, folks. She grew up poor.
I was
like
poor.
The movie that we're going to, well, like kind of like the movie that we're going to be covering today, which is A Little Princess that was made in the 90s. And I never saw it up until a couple days ago when my wife brought it up. And I watched the trailer. I'm like, okay, this could be interesting. But it actually turned out really well. And so for the viewers that don't know about the plot or haven't seen it in a long time or whatnot, like Bethany, why don't you describe the plot for us and then we'll go into our initial thoughts about the movie.
Yeah, and this was a movie that I grew up with in the 90s, and I think most little girls did. It's our crying movie. So Sarah Crewe is a little girl growing up in India. Her mother died when she was young. It's just her and her dad, and they have a really close relationship. But her dad is called to serve in World War I. So he enters her into a boarding school in New York, where she is instantly the girl to be jealous of because she comes from a very wealthy background. But that doesn't last for long.
No, it doesn't. So what made you, like all other little girls, really like this movie or in the 90s? Like what about it was like, oh man, this just really resonates with me?
I don't think I could have put my finger on that until we watched it again and I had to think about it. I had to think about the themes. It's really that there's a magic in everyday life and there is value in every person that's inherent. And it doesn't matter whether people can see your value or not, you have it.
Even like the woman that was kind of like Professor Umbridge in the Harry Potters, like she, I think she was
Miss Minchin. You're talking about Miss Minchin.
Yeah, I mean, even she has value.
Yes, didn't her father ever tell her that? Didn't he?
Didn't she ever? And if you hear a crying baby in the background, we have like a 1 month old. So
yeah, I have my microphone over him right now.
Yeah.
It's working, kind of.
Kind of, yeah. It'll be nice in about like 4 months when he's able to go into his own bed and sleep. So,
yes.
But, yeah, I don't know. Like, I did not like that teacher at all. She reminded me of Professor Umbridge. But mm-hmm. I did like her in the sense that she made the story and the plot more interesting.
Yeah, she drove the plot.
Yeah, because if she was just a nice teacher, like, I wouldn't watch this movie. Like, who cares? Like, it doesn't matter to me.
Right. No, she's nasty.
Yeah. So, some of my thoughts about the movie. I thought it was really good, but also slow. Like you said, it was going to speed up during like halfway through it, but I didn't really feel the speedy upness in it. It just felt kind of like it stayed like a steady, continuous pace. And but it was good. There was nothing wrong with it.
Right. Yeah. I guess I meant that's when the conflict enters.
Oh, with the dad?
Yeah.
Supposedly dying?
Yes, exactly.
Air quotes. Yeah. You told me that there was a symbolic message of why there was like a lot of green in this film. I mean, the house is green, the boarding school clothes were green, the balloon was freaking green. I mean, there was a lot of green in this movie. Do you remember why that is? Because
did you look it up?
I did look it up.
Oh.
And I got it from your favorite source. You just love this source. It's Google AI. And do you want to know what Google AI says about
Tell
this?
Tell me.
All right. So in the movie A Little Princess, the prominent use of green and the color, I don't even know how to pronounce this. If anyone knows me, I suck at pronouncing words.
Is it chartreuse?
It's P-A-L-E-T-T-E. Palette?
Isn't that just palette?
Palette? Yeah. Okay. Color palette was a deliberate artistic choice by the director Alfonso Cuarón.
What's his name?
Alfonso. A-L-F-O-N.
Yeah, it's Alfonso.
Alfonso. Why am I getting laughed at for that? I said it right, didn't I?
Alfonso Cuarón.
Yeah, Alfonso Cuarón.
Okay, yes, perfect. Go on.
Like the Cuarón. <It's>
No.
Anyways, so the highlighted part when you look at it, it says to create a distinctive and visually appealing aesthetic, often incorporating shades like forest green, moss green, and even sweet apple green in the girls' uniforms, giving the film a unique visual identity. Essentially, the green was used to enhance the mood and atmosphere of the story, not necessarily reflecting a specific meaning within the narrative. Now, that's Google AI, so take with that what you will.
Well, didn't we see a color change?
Yeah, that's what I was wondering, because when the girl found out the father was dying, or that the father died, and she was having a birthday party, like the balloon went from green to black, didn't it? Like, or was that just me?
I don't know. I'm not very good at picking up on visual tricks, but
yeah,
the whole movie suddenly got darker, right? And she traded in her green dress for a black dress.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the elements of the film, I think, were suddenly black instead of bright green and white. It was
right, but there was black. Still green in there after.
Yeah,
but it wasn't as noticeable. Yeah.
I think the first half of the film was green and white, and the second half was more green and black.
Okay. Yeah. So, what other elements, thoughts that you had about this movie?
Yeah. So, I was talking about how little girls like me loved this movie because it showed us about our value. And the way that they talk about that is through saying we're princesses. I never picked up that she's not saying, like, literally, we're all princesses. OMG, we're princesses. It's, you know, in the beginning, there's an Indian woman, and she says, all women are princesses. Mm-hmm. It is our right.
Was this the same Indian woman that was, like, in love with the Avatar dude?
No, it's the Indian woman who was sitting on the rock when Sarah was telling the story.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I thought the blue dude was like an Avatar dude. And then I thought that the other Indian like servant from the other house was Aladdin because he had the monkey. I'm like, man, this must be Aladdin's, like, what happened to Aladdin after, like,
you were very
Aladdin.
Confused during this movie. Yes.
I was really confused.
It's not that confusing. So, yeah. So all women are princesses. That always felt a little weird to me. Like, it is our right to be princesses.
Like, is some sort of snobby thing. Like, I'm a princess. Treat me with like royalty, you know?
Yes. And my dad was an anti-feminist.
So there was no royal treatment. Like, oh, honey, you don't do the dishes. I'll get those for you since you cooked.
Certainly not. He also didn't believe in self-esteem. Like, self-esteem is, you know, new age crap. You don't need that. So this phrase, I think, really bothered me when I was little because it's like, we don't have a right to be a princess. But I really believe from studying this film this time that she's saying we should be treated like princesses because we have value. Mm. All women are valuable. Mm. It is our right.
So I got a question. When you were younger, did you ever like daydream about being rescued by a prince or like, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, constantly. Because except it wasn't a prince. It was the cast of Star Trek.
Oh, okay. See, when I was younger, I daydreamed of like saving a girl.
Oh, yeah.
So I just think that's kind of like funny how like men and women like have that kind of inherent like ability to like you're the in our culture it's like you shouldn't be a damsel in distress. You should be like Black Widow and like be able to beat up the men and like just do everything your own self. But like I don't know. I think women want to be treated like princesses, not in a snobby way, but just as, hey, you're valuable and you're worth dignity and respect and whatnot.
Well, I mean, do men want to be treated like they are valuable? And
absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that's a universal thing.
Yeah.
We see that again in the dialogue between one of the younger girls at the boarding school and Sarah. There's Becky. She is...
That's slave girl?
Yeah. Well... Yeah. I mean, technically, she's a servant girl.
Servant girl,
but
right.
She does have dark skin, so they're not allowed to talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
And Sarah asks why, and the little girl said, "Oh, well, she's a servant girl and she has dark skin." And Sarah says, "So," and the little girl says, "So doesn't that mean something?"
It's like, where were you raised? I mean, I get it. It was like over 100 years ago, so times were a little bit different, but still it's like...
Well, I love just how that short statement really reveals the problem with treating people differently.
Just because of the color of their skin?
Yeah. Like, so you're saying she's not valuable because of her skin color? Like, that just seems silly.
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree. Yeah, it just kind of like makes you put a pause on like, oh, that's actually kind of... really stupid to think about like treating somebody differently just because they have a different skin tone or something.
Yeah, I think Sarah is treated differently in this movie because
she's rich.
Because she's rich, she's pretty, she's smart. I think people are jealous of her and they really dislike that she knows her worth.
Hmm. Because all the other ones didn't know their worth because they're told their worth by Mrs. Umbridge.
Miss Minchin.
I'm going to call her Miss Umbridge, dadgummit.
Right, you remember that scene between Miss Minchin and Sarah where she's locking her in the attic? Miss Minchin is locking Sarah in the attic and Sarah is yelling at Miss Minchin like that she is still a princess. Didn't her father ever tell her that?
Mm-hmm.
And we see Miss Minchin lock the door, and then she has a single tear.
Mm-hmm. Oh, right, because she probably never was told that. She was never told, like, oh, yeah, I am, like, worth something.
Yeah, I think Miss Minchin had to prove her worth. She wasn't just treated like she was valuable. And she hates Sarah for recognizing at such a young age that she's a valuable person.
Mm-hmm.
So what was a theme that you pulled out?
Well, one of the themes that I pulled out was, and so her father dies, and then you see the Professor Umbridge gal, like, immediately just cut her off of things, like, oh, you have this party, and now, like, I find out, like, your father's dead, his estate's gone, like, you have $0, zero coins, whatever the currency was back then, to your name. And yeah. And she just throws her up in the attic like she's, like, just nothing.
Yeah.
Like, doesn't even take the time to sit down and, like, process to see what the girl's going through. Or doesn't, like, she immediately stops the party rather than just, like, not let the party continue, wait till the party's over, and then say, hey, there's something that we need to tell you, and then tell her, and then let's like let her like breathe for a little bit. It was just like, all right, throw out the party, go upstairs in the attic, like you lost everything, like here's your clothes, you're going to become a slave girl now.
Yeah.
Like that's pretty harsh for a 12-year-old girl?
Somewhere around there.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of the things that I noticed was how, you know, her worth from that Professor Umbridge's viewpoint was money. It's like, if you have money, you're worth. If you don't have money, you're not worth, right? Like, that was just kind of like the viewpoint. Like, am I kind of there? Yeah.
I'm from Miss Minchin's viewpoint, those students were what made her money, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I was just thinking about when Jesus was talking to Peter, and he was telling him that he was going to go away, and Peter's like, no, I'm going to go with you. And Peter's like, or Jesus is like, hey, you're going to deny me three times. But then like Jesus reaffirms and say, hey, I'm going to go build a room for you in my mansion or whatnot. And I just find it so fascinating that we see Jesus like all throughout the Gospel of John and probably in the other Gospels, but I especially notice throughout the Gospel of John because that's just the book that we're in my Bible study. But Jesus is always referred to Jesus of Nazareth. Like he's always referred to people that are really lowly. Like if you, wherever you grow up, there's always that one place where there's going to be that town that's like, oh, those people, like they're really impoverished, they're poor. Like we have a town here that Scott always refers to. It's Beauville, like because it's just, you know, it's like.
Oh, I thought he more teased us for the town we live in.
No. He teased Beauville. Oh, like he okay, always. Yeah, because Beauville, there's like barely anybody there. Like, I mean, it's pretty much I don't know if it's destitute, but like you just wouldn't be like, yeah, I'm from Beauville, you know?
Place I visited in Beauville was a trailer where a hoarder had been living and he had no running water. So I feel like that's fair.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is that Jesus, the Son of God, who is God, came in the flesh, he identified. He could have like been born anywhere, right? Like he's God, but he chose to be like born and like associate in Nazareth, like Jesus of Nazareth. And when I look at this story, like there's a total difference. Like you see, forgive me of the name again, but Professor Umbridge.
Miss Minchin.
Miss Minchin.
Yeah, quit mixing your fantasy stories.
Miss Minchin saw worth and like value with money, and Jesus associates with the poor and the lowly. And even with like Peter, like getting back to that, like he knows Peter is going to deny him. And yet he says, hey, I'm going to build a room for you where I'm going. So, I mean, he does the complete opposite of what Miss Minchin would do.
Yes.
Because if it had been Miss Minchin in the Gospel of John, she would have been like, oh, Peter, you're going to deny me? Well, you're not going to heaven, bud. So I'm not building you no room. Right. You know what I'm saying? So, that's kind of one of the themes I picked up on was that.
I have a trick question for you.
Okay, what?
What does Sarah Crewe and Jesus have in common?
Sarah Crewe and Jesus have in common.
They both use storytelling to get their point across.
Oh, right. Because I didn't even pick up on that. See, this is why you're on the podcast, because like my brain didn't go there, because Jesus often talked in parables and to get the point across to the Jews, the Gentiles, the Pharisees, the tax collectors, like he used. a bunch of stories to get points across.
But because if he had just straight up told people, who's your neighbor? Everybody's your neighbor. Like, just
everyone's
nice
your
to
neighbor,
everybody.
Stupid. I mean, like, what? But really, who's my neighbor? You are a rabbi Jew that knows definitions and you know, like, the law all by heart, and you don't even know who your neighbor is. Like, are you some sort of idiot? I mean,
right. Yeah. That would have put everybody on the defensive. So right. They wouldn't have been able to listen as well.
Mm-hmm.
And they would have been able to immediately counter those points.
Right.
And instead, he would tell a story, which got his point across. And you can't argue with a story.
It's hard to argue with a story. That's why when I was on the Pastors Unfiltered podcast, I talked a little bit about how the prophet Nathan came up to David after he sinned against Uriah or Bathsheba and killed Uriah. And Nathan didn't be like, hey, David, you sinned against. Like, he used this story to point out, like, for how, so that David could, like, basically admit his own fault.
Yeah.
Because he was like, hey, you know, like, this guy, this king came in and took this guy's sheep. And David's like, dude, that is just straight up immoral. And then Nathan's like, yeah, I know. The king's you, sir. And he's like, oh, I just basically said I'm immoral.
Yes.
So I, getting back to the movie, like, yeah, Sarah did really use story to get these girls' imaginations. That's one of the things that I saw, like, when we first were introduced to, like, all the little schoolgirls, they were just sourpusses. Like, and
yeah,
again, with Miss Minchin being the teacher, like, I don't blame them. Like, when you have those kind of teachers, it really does suck. But it was really cool to see that when Sarah stepped in and she was telling these stories, like, how excited all these girls got with, like, oh, we can actually tell a different fictional, you know, like, story versus the stupid story that's in this book. Like, I didn't even think of that.
Right. It made everybody feel like they had more options than they did before. Like, Miss Minchin's sister realized that she didn't have to do life the way that her sister was doing it, that she could dream bigger and maybe even run away with that handsome milkman.
Oh, that was Miss Minchin's sister?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, they were sisters.
See, again, that's why you're on here. No, I was like, I didn't even... Well, they look kind of different.
Yeah, a whole lot different.
One of and the... acted different.
Yes. I think one of the clearest ways that we saw the power of her storytelling was when the youngest girl in the school was throwing a fit, and Miss Minchin's sister is just trying to kind of cajole her out of it. Lottie, dear, Lottie, please stop, Lottie. And Sarah comes up, and she starts telling this story about how their mothers are in heaven watching over them, and they ride the clouds like and they go through a magic valley under the moon and over the stars until they're hovering right above us. And they send us messages, but it's very hard to hear them if you're screaming like that. And that gets the point across to this little girl faster than anything else, that she needs to stop screaming her head off.
That was the little girl that was screaming in the hallway all the time?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was basically after that moment she really stopped doing that, wasn't it?
Yeah, she didn't.
Except
do it again.
For like when she did the fake out crying when all the girls were trying to get the locket.
Yeah. Which is great.
I love the little, is it Becky? That's
yeah.
The little slave girl. She's just like screaming, and then Miss Minchin's like looking at her, and she's like, what did she say? She's like, oh, I'm fine.
Yeah. Hello.
Yeah. My favorite part of the movie was when the Miss Minchin's sister was going to run off with that milk carton guy, dude.
Yes.
And then she like throws the stuff out the window, and then she just like falls out, and he's like, oh, crap. And she lands on him. I think that was my favorite part of the movie.
That was great.
Yeah.
Did you pick out any other themes?
I mean, it was mostly like just kind of what I said. Like the main one was just that the rich girls and the slave girl, like they couldn't associate with one another. And then really it, the school was really strict. You know, they can't imagine, they'd be quiet. Like there's, you know, you just have to do everything by the book. And that's some kind of something I've been noticing. It's like the more stricter like things are, and there's no room to kind of like grow and like fail and whatnot, like the more hardened people become. And that's kind of what I love about God, is that he's in this process of walking with us in our relationship with them. Like we're able to fail and make mistakes. You know, it's not like he's like this strict God. Like, yeah, there are rules, there's commandments and all that. But like, you know, look at like all the disciples throughout Jesus's ministry, how many times they screwed up and how gracious he was to them. I mean, like we've been talking about Peter, and he basically denies Jesus three times. And when Jesus sees him again, he doesn't like rebuke him, be like, dude, you're in just a, like, I was with you 3 years and then you do this kind of garbage. Like he goes on the shore and then he feeds them breakfast. And then he talks with Peter about kind of what happened. And then he's like, hey, you're going to, you know, you're going to be a part of like this ministry and this kingdom building.
Yeah.
You know? And so God gives us kind of space to room to grow and whatnot. He's not like this strict, overbearing God that we see in this mansion or this boarding school with Miss Minchin.
Yeah. That's good. Yeah, that's a really good interpretation.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think a lot of us view God sometimes as a big mismention, waiting for us to make a mistake.
And just like bring the hammer and just like, boom. Mm-hmm. You know, I told you not to do this crap anymore. Like, but I, you know, when I read the gospel accounts, and I read Acts, and I read like, you know, what Paul says, like a lot of this is like, there's so much grace. Like, yes, again, like there's, there are commandments in there that, you know, God wants us to obey. You know, Jesus says, if you love me, you obey my commandments. But also like there's a lot of grace in there for when we fall and stumble into sin, and, you know, he's gracious to pick us back up again and keep moving forward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Yeah. One last theme that I picked out of this movie was you reap what you sow.
Is that because Miss Minchin is...
You almost called her Umbridge again.
Miss Umbridge's great-grandmother, Miss Minchin. How about that?
Sure, sure. They're probably related. Yeah. So that's one of the things is Miss Minchin in the end of the movie ends up working for the chimney sweeper that she was mean to.
See, that's what I loved about the Harry Potter series, when at the end of like the book, Miss Umbridge is like, hey, Harry, tell them I'm a really good person. Don't have these centaurs take me away. And he's like, Miss Umbridge, I'm sorry, I cannot tell lies. It's like, ah, sucker.
Served you right. There's a lot of examples in the movie where Sarah's kind to somebody and then they are kind to her back. Like she teaches Ermengarde French so that Ermengarde can impress her dad.
Oh, okay.
And then Ermengarde was the one who set up the elaborate plan to steal Sarah's locket back from Miss Minchin. But there's one exception to there's several of these, like, Sarah reaps and then sows.
Right.
But the one exception is Lavinia.
Was that the snobby girl?
Yes, the snotty, two-faced girl.
But she did turn around in the end.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Nothing happened to her. She didn't sow what she, or she did not reap what she sowed. Because Lavinia was mean and nasty to everyone.
But you wouldn't want to just watch her, you know, comb her hair for like 2 hours while these other girls were listening to this great imagination storytelling by Sarah.
Clearly a time before TikTok to want to watch anybody brush their hair. Actually, we watch people brush their hair on TikTok.
We watch a lot of people do some really weird things on TikTok. We'll watch people mow lawns on TikTok. We wouldn't want to mow lawns, but we'll watch someone mow a lawn.
Yeah. Wow. Anyways, so you would think that she would have, you know, reaped what she sowed, that she would have ended up like Miss Minchin.
Yeah. Well, I mean, she was also 12. Miss Minchin was an adult.
Yeah. But she was needlessly nasty.
Yeah, she was.
To Sarah. But instead, she's kind of undone by Sarah's kindness to her.
Mm.
And Sarah's refusal to take revenge. And in the end, she comes around and is friends with everyone, including Sarah.
Quit banging your hand on the table.
I'm sorry.
When you're nude podcasting, it's an unspoken rule that you cannot slam your hand on the table because the podcast picks it up.
Just feels very slammable.
I know,
sorry.
Right? Yeah, it was kind of cool to see her just come at the end. She's kind of like a thief on the cross, almost, in a sense. Like, you know, she's poor, or, you know, treating people poor her whole life, and, or, you know, in that whole movie.
Yeah.
And then she kind of came around at the end as she was leaving. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, wow, you should have realized that. Which I really wish they would have maybe done a scene or two that would kind of showed her, like, how she came to that. Maybe because she saw all the other, like, girls in the school really enjoy her. But I don't know what made her think, like, oh, I kind of treated her like crap. Maybe I should make amends with her. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was kind of out of the blue for me.
It was absolutely out of the blue. But I think it was just trying to get across the mercy that Sarah had on her.
Yeah, because she could have been like, you've been, like, rude to me this whole time. Why should I offer you forgiveness? And, again, like, we see that with Jesus. Like, no matter how poorly we've treated him, like, he's always willing to forgive and have mercy and grace on us. You know, if we come to true repentance, like that one girl did, like, mm-hmm. I mean, you could tell on her face that she had true kind of like a remorse over, like, how she treated Sarah and the other girls.
Like, what I like specifically about that scene is she doesn't say anything. She doesn't say, I'm sorry.
Mm.
She doesn't bring up any of that. She just hugs Sarah.
Yeah.
And then they laugh together over a sort of inside joke.
Right.
And I think I do that a lot with Jesus, because I'll go through a time where I'm not reading my Bible and I feel kind of guilty about it.
Mm. As most Christians do.
Yeah. And I feel like I can't even talk to Jesus because I've wronged him somehow.
Like, oh man, like, I've been on my TikTok, like, way more than prayer in my Bible, so
yeah,
I don't know why you'd want me, Jesus. So
yes, that whole cycle. And instead of getting trapped in the cycle of, I'm sorry, I'm such a terrible person, just going back to him and being like, hi, it's me.
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that he will take me back every time, that's an insane amount of kindness and grace and mercy.
Yeah.
That he has.
So is that, like, kind of your goodness of God moment that you took away in it?
Yeah.
Yeah. That is really good. That's a different one than what I had.
Oh, what do you got?
So my, like, what, like, so yours is, like, no matter how bad you've been, like, you can kind of be, what's her name? Not Sarah, but the other
Lavinia.
Guy. Lavinia. You could be a Lavinia and be like, oh, like, have this moment. And it doesn't even have to be like a salvific moment, like you come to Jesus and you get saved or whatnot. It could be like your daily walk. Like, you've been walking with Jesus and whatnot for 16 years. I don't know how long.
Sure.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I was going to say 12, but then I'm like, well, no, that's me. So that doesn't work. But, you know, like in our walks, like we go through ups and downs. We have highs and lows. We go through valleys. We go through mountains. And, you know, that's just the process. I mean, that's, you know, a relationship, right? And so I really like that. Mine was with the father. Because the twist of the movie is that the father didn't really die. He was found and he got amnesia. Mm-hmm. And so he forgot about his daughter, Sarah. And, the rich guy next door, took the father in.
Yes.
I can't remember the reason because that father had a son in the war. Mm-hmm. And the son died, but the father was with the son when he died, right?
The way you're telling this is so confusing.
Yeah, I'm botching this part up.
Yeah, so Mr. Randall's son, John, went to war at the same time as Sarah's father, Mr. Crewe. Mr. Crewe tried to save Mr. Randall in the trenches, but was unsuccessful, but ended up with his ID.
Mm-hmm.
So the military hospital told Mr. Randall that his son was alive but sick. And when Mr. Randall got there, of course, it was Mr. Crewe who didn't know who he was. And Mr. Randall said, you know, clearly this is not my son. And I feel like a fool for coming here. What would a wise man have done? And his servant Ramdas said, a wise man would see the pain in this man's face,
mm-hmm.
and realized that since he was in the same unit,
mm-hmm.
as your son, when he recovers, he may know something about where your son is.
Oh, right. And then, okay, that's what it was. So anyways, the guy has amnesia. He's living like right next door to the boarding school where Sarah is, and she believes that the father is dead. Her father's dead. And then she does something to where she pisses off Miss Minchin. Miss Minchin calls the police on her to have her be arrested and either put out in the street or something. And she goes and basically jumps to the other house using like a board to get across to the other platform. And then she finds her dad and the dad's like, I don't know who you are. And for me, I think with most people, there's this tendency to think that, you know, since God is so big and he created all this space and like the planets and the solar system, that maybe he's forgotten about us, kind of like he's forgotten about us, like the dad in that movie. Of course, again, we have to remember that, you know, God isn't limited physically. Like, he is omniscient. Like, it means that he's all-knowing. And so he can't, like, have amnesia. He can't forget what he created.
Yeah.
And that's something that's really cool about who the God of the Bible is. And I was looking up this verse because I remembered this verse in the Psalms. But Psalm 8:4, and it says, "What is man that you're mindful of him? And the Son of Man that you care for him." And, you know, all throughout the Bible, God is telling us to cast our cares onto him because he cares for you. And, you know, he sees you right now where you're at, and he wants you to basically, like, if you're an unbeliever, turn around and, like, turn towards him. And if you're, you know, a believer and, you know, you're kind of in that valley and you're struggling, like, to recognize that he's right there. Like, I think it says somewhere in scripture that, you know, God's not very far from any of us. Mm-hmm. Like, you can turn around and he's right there. It's not like you have to go travel thousands of miles or do all these, like, really religious things to find God. Like, he's there if you want to turn your life over to him, turn your life over to Jesus. And he's not going to forget you like Sarah's father did. And so that's my kind of like, goodness, God, I honestly liked yours better than mine, but you know,
Because mine's not a negative. He won't forget you. Yeah.
Well, yeah. What do you mean by a negative?
No, not like negative and positive, but
oh,
you interpreted a negative from an action in the film.
Interpreted negative from an action in the film.
I'm very tired.
Is this Sarah's like a negative times a positive is a negative?
Okay. So Sarah's father forgot about her.
Yeah.
God will not forget about you. That's a negative. The not. Not is a negative.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. So it's not a direct correlation.
Gotcha. Yeah. I mean, again, like, I do that a lot, but
It's just a grammar thing. It's okay.
Oh, it's a grammar. See, I'm not good at grammar. Yeah, as we saw from the beginning, like, I'm not very good at grammar.
What's the name of the guy who directed this movie?
Alfonso. Al Pacino. Well, anyways, I think, do you have any other final thoughts for this movie?
No, I don't.
All right. Well, I think next week we are going to do Pitch Perfect.
All right.
And that one was given to me by Brandon Bills from Pastors Unfiltered. And we watched it last night. And I got to say, I like it. And I'll leave it there at that. And I'll have my comments about it next week. And we'll just dive in to see what, like, and just dive into it and to see the goodness of God in it and how it relates for us. So thank you guys for listening. If you could rate the show 5 stars, that'd be awesome. If you could share with someone you know, that'd be even more awesome. And like my friend Blaine always says, don't party too hard without me. What? Catch you guys later. Whether it's at home or at the movie theater, Movie Night Apologetics exists
to show you the goodness of God in movies we watch.
I'm movie apologist Clark.
And I'm Bethany.
And this is Movie Night Apologetics.